This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave.
It's World Wide Wave time here on Joy 94.9, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight, we are venturing to a country that is at the forefront of LGBT rights. We're heading to Denmark. Why did the country that was the very first to allow civil partnerships take so long to adopt same-sex marriage? What makes Denmark the happiest country in the world? And what impact has achieving the extensive same-sex rights that they do have, what impact has that had on their own gay community in Denmark? To explore this, we will be speaking with Kenneth Engberg. He is the Acting Secretary General of LGBT Denmark, which was founded in 1948, and it's Denmark's main LGBT rights organisation. We're in Denmark on World Wide Wave.
Bring joy to the world. Listen to us everywhere. Download the Joy smartphone app now at joy.org.au.
It's the World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time, and tonight we have stopped off in wonderful, wonderful Copenhagen, or Denmark. Time for some fun, fast facts. Denmark is incredibly progressive, one of the true leaders in the world of LGBT rights. It has not just LGBT rights, rights in general. It provides one of the highest degrees of liberty for its people, and in particular its LGBT community. Same-sex sexual activity? Well, it's obviously legal. How far back do you think that went, guys?
20 years, maybe? 20, 30?
Keep going, keep going. 1933.
Wow. My goodness. That is progressive.
And so in the midst of depression and all those sorts of things, they still found time to decriminalise same-sex sexual activities. And in fact, 1977, the age of consent was made consistent at 15, regardless of sexual orientation or gender.
That's quite a low age of consent, though.
I guess it is. I mean, we're at 16 here in Australia, so it's not far off.
Not far off,
The fact that they did it quite early in the piece.
I know, I'm impressed.
And I noticed, though, that there is quite a large gap between recognition of same-sex unions as registered partnerships, so that was 1989, and the legalisation of same-sex marriage, which was only 2012, so just last year, actually.
That's right. So Denmark was the very first country in the world to grant a form of legal recognition to their same-sex people, which was in the form of registered partnerships. But yeah, you're right, last year. And we're actually going to talk to our guest tonight from LGBT Denmark, Kenneth, who we put that question to him because it sounds a little bit odd.
And adoption and family planning. Since 1999, a person of the same sex registered partnership has been able to adopt his or her partner's biological children. It's known as stepchild adoption.
Again, very, very progressive, and there's quite a lot of countries where adoption is that tipping point in the debate. In France, when they were putting up same-sex marriage, they put adoption into the same bucket, and that was the bit that actually got a lot of people riled. So
exactly. But it took until 2006 for them to repeal a law that since 1997 had banned lesbians from artificial insemination.
So step by step, and then 2010, same-sex couples were able to jointly apply for adoption.
So come in Australia, take a leaf out of Denmark, is what I say.
I mean, come on, you're so far behind Australia. What's going on?
Maybe we should use our Aussie link. Maybe we should send a message out to Princess Mary of Tasmania, who's shacked up with Prince Frederick, and say, listen, come over here. Next time you're chatting with our PM, Tony Abbott, drop a few words in there about how equal and egalitarian your country is.
Maybe you can get an interview with her, revisit Denmark.
I'd give that a go, actually.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather interview Prince Frederick, but, you know, he's not in the studio, though.
Now we come up to this year, where a Guatemalan became the first transgender person to be granted asylum in Denmark because of persecution in her native country.
Wow, and they have all sorts of discrimination protections. In fact, the full suite of protections against discrimination of sexual orientation and hate crime laws as well.
Fantastic.
Is this gay utopia?
Is there anything they can't do?
Boa noite. This is David from Brazil, listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
It's the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time, where tonight we are stopped off in Denmark. We spoke during the week with Kenneth Engberg. Now, Kenneth is the Acting Secretary General of LGBT Denmark and also their spokesperson for hate crimes and senior policy. Now, this is an organisation, it's the biggest LGBT rights organisation in Denmark, works in the areas of advocacy, discrimination or anti-discrimination, lobbying and support for LGBT community. And we were interested in exploring with Kenneth some of the current issues, and we started by discussing exactly what you talked about before, Chris, why it took so long between achieving civil partnerships and same-sex marriage. Denmark was the first country in the world to grant legal recognition for same-sex unions back in 1989, but it then took until last year to achieve same-sex marriage. Why was that?
Well, I don't think the political situation was ready for us to gain access directly to the church. But I also think what changed it was that we have 60% of the Danish population were for getting us the possibility to get married in the church. And then we have about, I think it was 30% who didn't care. So we have, like, totally backed up by the people. And so therefore, the government and voted persons has to change it, and then let us have this right.
The laws that came in for same-sex marriage allow for gay weddings to take place within the Danish National Church, although priests are allowed to decline that. The majority of Danes are from the Danish National Church. Is that quite a significant achievement?
Well, I think so. I mean, we haven't heard about that for a church group that says that it would be okay for us to have the marriage. So I think it's a huge achievement that we have got there.
What is it about Danish culture? Because really you've been able to achieve the full range of LGBT rights. You're right at the forefront of progress in the world. What is it about culture that makes that possible?
Well, I think it's about a Danish way of thinking that as long as you live your own life, you should be allowed to live the life you want to live, as long as you don't force it on anyone else. The same with religion, the same as anything else. It would be okay as long as you keep it from yourself. So therefore, I think that's the reason why it was easier for many Danes to say, it's okay, they have the right, because it has nothing to do with me. So I think it's more for the Danes' way of thinking that makes that possible.
In fact, last week I read that Denmark was voted the happiest country in the world. Does that surprise you at all?
Well, we have received that for the last, I think, 4 years, that we should be the most happy people in the world. And I also think in some way we are that. We are not pressured by some religion person who hits us in the head to tell us what to think. We have to live our life. As long as you don't step on us, we are happy. We like to live the life compared to other country, I think. So that's the reason why everyone says that we are the happiest people in the world. We also, can you say, has a very small difference between very poor people and very rich people, so we are very united in a way also.
That sense of, I guess, social support and equality across the country, do you believe that is beneficial to seeking LGBT rights?
Yes, definitely I do. I think very much that we don't have to fight for the right to exist as a person, but even though you don't have to fight to get food or go to school or university, go to hospital, that makes you think that you have some sort of large freedom that you also want to give out to other people. So I think that's some of the reason why we as an LGBT group has somehow looked from outside easier by getting the LGBT rights. So I think that has something to do with it.
Can you tell us a bit about your organization, LGBT Denmark?
Yeah, our organization is, of course, for all those who the letter stands for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender. And for the moment, we are fighting very much for the transgender person's freedoms life, that giving them taken off the illness list and be accepted as a way of living, that you have this transgender need. And we have become more like a union, that we are using more of our time to see if companies and government hold the law and do it right, if there is some hate crime, to see if they're following the law and actually giving people the extra time in prison for doing a hate crime and so on. So I see us more as a union, more that a freedom fighting group.
Is hate crime much of an issue in Denmark?
Well, we have a reality guy, gay guy, who has been punched down for a week ago. And we have another one that been knocked down, a transgender, for 2 months ago, 3 months ago. So it has been an issue right now. But comparing to other countries, when you hear about stories from the neighbor country in Europe, we don't have this high problem with hate crime. But it is a problem in our levels, but it's more like people get egg thrown at and beaten by the hand, but we haven't had any killing because of the sexuality or transgender.
This is Ulrike Lunacek, member of the European Parliament and co-president of the Parliament's LGBT intergroup on the World Wide Web.
Now, we are in Denmark tonight. We're exploring the issues, and it was really interesting in that last section from Kenneth that the LGBT Denmark organisation is becoming more like a union, checking and influencing organisations. So we were interested in exploring with Kenneth some of the current day situations for LGBT people in Denmark, including the impacts of migration. Some countries in Europe have had issues with migration, and whether that issue has been one of people coming in from a different culture and being less accepting of LGBT issues, or whether it's been a political issue that has been raised. Has that come up in Denmark?
Well, we have a group of people from other countries that has a problem with gay people, and it mostly is people from the Middle East with another religion. And it is an issue that is actually something that we are talking a lot about, because you have to understand that maybe you are, for example, a Muslim. It is okay you are that, but if you do a job as a social worker, you have to put that aside if you have to take care of a gay person, for example. And that's some of the discussion that we are more starting up now. So I'm hoping that would change in the coming years, and we have an issue that make people understand that you have to divide yourself and accept that your religion stays at home, and when you go to job, you have to accept everyone.
I read that there was a LGBT group in Copenhagen called Sabar who were providing support for people from ethnic minorities, helping them to come out. Are you seeing that as being an issue?
It is an extra issue for a lot of new Danes coming to Denmark, that people, that their folks or parents, and has a way of thinking that it is difficult for them to jump out and say that they are gay, because it's not, in their point of view, good things to be. I mean, I have had a student who said to me, if you don't have a boyfriend, why do you say you are gay? And I said, well, it has nothing to do with that, but in their mind, that is the issue. And if you live in a world that says that rather lie than tell that you're gay, and that would get you to somehow to have a lot of problem by jumping out, and then you have all the religion issues as well.
I read one writer who talked of the equality that has been achieved in Denmark as actually in some ways being a problem. And what he was saying was that when there was things to fight for, it caused a very great sense of community, a very strong sense. And now, with less to fight, the community is not as visible and cohesive. Is that something that you've noticed?
That is definitely something we are fighting for, because a lot of people say, well, we have got it all now, so stop fighting. And we are trying to tell people that that's the reason why we are going from being some sort of freedom fighter to be a union that keep an eye on that the situation is okay and they are following the law. And of course, we in Denmark has an international part that tries to help other European and Africans, LGBT groups, to receive the same sort of freedom that we have. So, of course, for LGBT Denmark, we are starting to looking out and try to use EU more in this fight.
Indeed, I saw that a petition was presented to the Russian consulate against their anti-gay laws by groups in Denmark.
Yeah, that's right. We have this large upright that we make this a group of a lot of interesting people who has interest in this, and then we went together and make this big writing and went to the embassy to give them our sign that tells them that we don't think it's proper way of acting.
Have you noticed resistance within some countries to perhaps seeing you as coming in and being involved where you shouldn't be involved in their issues?
I think that actually that when we are coming as an LGBT Denmark, for example, to some of the Baltic countries, for example, Estland and Lithuania, we are somehow providing them extra security, because we are coming as for somehow official representative of Denmark. So therefore they have to make that security, and that will give the other people this more debt as well. So I think actually it's forcing the government to step up for their security for example Pride in different countries. So that's the reason why we're doing it.
Finally, you are the host country for Eurovision 2014, perhaps the campest music event. Have you got anything exciting planned? Because Eurovision is actually very popular here in Australia.
Well, not at this moment, but I know that the European music group or team that every country in Europe has doubled their support groups now. So I know they are doing something, and I know that a lot of towns in this country that make large screens so everyone can see it, nowhere and be together. So, but still, we are waiting for the broadcasting network to tell us exactly what they are thinking, because they want to try something new. And we are told that the place is going to be an old shipyard, and it's going to be, I think, very interesting, but they are very closed about it, so it's going to be very exciting. I'm very proud, actually.
Excellent. Congratulations on all your achievements in terms of rights, and thanks for speaking to us on the World Wide Wave.
Uplifting, informing, empowering. Joy 94.9.
Now, the voice you've been hearing is Kenneth Engberg, who is the Acting Secretary General of LGBT Denmark, which is Denmark's oldest and largest LGBT rights organisation. I was fascinated, guys, by this idea that they were losing their sense of community. They'd got all their rights, and therefore, you know, when they had something to fight for, people felt a sense of there being a gay community or an LGBT community. Now that they've got everything, they're finding it a bit hard to maintain that sense of community.
I think it sounds like it could be seen as quite a nice, if a little sad, evolution, because if you think about it, the LGBT community is quite diverse and disparate compared to any other. You know, the thing that brings people together is the fact that everyone is denied the same set of rights, essentially. But, like, the difference between someone who identifies as asexual, for example, compared to someone who identifies as trans, compared to someone who identifies as gay, can be so, so different, you know.
But we still try and lump them all together into the one box of LGBT.
Yeah, and people do come together because, you know, in a place like Australia where we don't have all our sets of rights, we can all gather around the one cause. But I suppose in Denmark, the fact that they're, I don't know, fraying a little bit at the edges isn't necessarily a bad thing. I suppose it's a bit sad, though.
But is that necessarily a bad thing that that they no longer have to be thrown into the big melting pot? That they can, now that everyone's got their own rights, you know, they don't necessarily have to be part of the LGBTIQXYZ alphabet. You know, that they can actually be their own selves and their own communities once more.
And it's certainly a very egalitarian society. There was a story just from earlier this year, a gay couple who met for a drink in a bar and had a bit of a kiss. This was a non-gay bar, if you like. And a bouncer said, "None of that, out you go." And in fact, other people in the bar stood up for them. He picked the wrong guy because one of the guys was a member of the Danish LGBT youth organisation, who then called the police and said, "Hey, this is not on." Fact that everybody in the people in the bar and the bartender said, "Hang on, no, you can't do that." And in the end, he got an apology and everything. So
that actually reminds me a little bit about one of those experiments that you sometimes see on the internet, where they have this, you know, actor playing a sexist or a racist or something like that.
I've seen those on BuzzFeed, yeah.
Yeah, and it's amazing that even in... you know, in countries like Texas and which may not necessarily be known as being very socially progressive, they stood up for the homophobic abuse. And, you know, there was a bit that touched me because it was actually a lesbian couple that was, because they were also actors, but lesbian couple that were being attacked, in inverted commas, by the waitress. And this guy walks out, and he comes back and hands the couple a note, and he said, pretty much saying that as a Christian, he had been appalled by what the waitress was saying, and that he loves them just the way they are, and they don't have to change.
It was such a tearjerker. They were crying. I was crying.
I know.
We might have to post that one on our Facebook page, joy.org.au/worldwidewave. You can find us there. Now, in Denmark, this issue of immigration is also coming to the fore, and it's from both sides, interestingly. So on the one part, there are people moving into Denmark who are from a different background and not as supportive, not as much knowledge on LGBT issues and the rights that are gained. But there's also this issue of people coming who are migrating who are having difficulty coming out. And in fact, it was mentioned in the interview, the organisation Sabar, who set up a support for people from ethnic minorities who are coming out and helping them through that process. So
what a
sort of
valuable service.
Sort of the good and the bad on both sides.
Yeah, well, I mean, what a wonderful opportunity as well for people moving to a new country to, you know, learn something about what it means to be diverse in Denmark.
Now, Denmark also has an apparent world first, because a Danish zoo, they had a penguin chick who did not have parents, so two dads adopted it. So this a female penguin abandoned one of her eggs, and the zoologist decided to see how two male penguins would handle looking after the eggs, and it turns out they were natural parents.
And I love it that they were able to experiment. Can you imagine that happening at Melbourne Zoo? They're like, let's try be the gay parenting with the lionesses.
We'll send them this story and see if that brings inspiration.
So also, it also puts a very strong argument to those people who keep saying that homosexuality is unnatural, because clearly it is, clearly is natural.
Well, yeah, and I never really hold at those arguments. Unless you're an evolutionary biologist and you've got peer-reviewed papers published, don't try and talk to me about evolution. If it was going to evolve out, it would be gone. So there.
And exactly.
And who's going to argue with penguins anyway?
This is Tiseke Kasambala from Human Rights Watch, South Africa office on the World Wide Wave.
Where tonight we have been in Denmark.
Denmark has just been voted the happiest country in the world. And I was sort of wondering, how does one sort of decide that?
Is it that they are on drugs? Is it that they get more sex than anybody? I don't know. Well, no, there is actually a scientific way that they assess this. So it's a large survey. And there's six components. So there's, if you like, the government side, they call it, at the scale, which a country that has a large GDP per capita, a healthy life expectancy, and a lack of corruption in leadership. So it's all the official
stuff. I love the lack of corruption. How do they measure that?
Yeah, cuts out a lot of countries, doesn't it?
Yes.
And then the human side of the scale, which is a sense of social support freedom to make life choices, and a culture of generosity.
Freedom to make life choices. I like that one a lot.
It is. And
me too.
From everything we've heard tonight, you can clearly hear that Denmark excels in that. They've got one of the highest rates of volunteerism in the world. They have parental leave, paid parental leave, 52 weeks for the mother and 2 weeks at 100% salary for the father. Healthcare is a civil right. It's there, and they encourage people to make use of their doctors.
Amazing. It sounds like happiest country is a bit better than the most livable city, doesn't it?
Exactly, exactly. I mean, I think we could learn something from there, and certainly in terms of the social support, you know, 52 weeks paid parental leave.
It's been fantastic dissecting the issues and opportunities around Denmark. Now we're skipping into a worldwide wrap where we cruise around the world and have a look at what's been making the news around the world this past week. What have you got there, Heath?
Well, we're going to go over to the empire we're technically still a part of. And I just found this: British LGBTI refugees apparently have to prove their sexuality.
How do you prove your sexuality?
Well, as I said before, if I was there, I would have been happily show them myself.
My sexuality to you any day of the week. No,
exactly.
So to give a bit arrested. Of background, true. I think the UK was one of the first countries that actually recognised sexual orientation as a grounds for seeking asylum. So in that respect, they were actually in front of the rest of the world. And I know that Australia is still playing catch-ups with our LGBT-identified asylum seekers. But unfortunately, because it's a very sceptical system over there of applying for asylum, it's meant that when asked, well, prove it, you know, show me your sexuality, because it's, you know, it's much harder to prove sexuality, I suppose, than, for example, ethnicity or religion. People have been forced to reveal things such as footage of, you know, videos they might have once made, perhaps, or photographs of intimate encounters.
What if you didn't have that foresight? You didn't know you had to do that. Like, I know that I don't go regularly making sex tapes and photographing intimate
activities. I imagine that if they're asylum seekers as well, they probably wouldn't be bringing over all manner of things. I think they just bring essentials. So I think what's been happening is that people have been having to make things with their current partners in the country as they seek asylum, which is just horribly upsetting and really invasive and terrible.
The UK is not alone on this, though. In Hong Kong, customs took a transgender woman aside and subjected her to body search that lasted more than 9 hours, and they kept her behind bars while she was asking to speak to her country's consulate and seeking support. So she was subjected to all sorts of ridicule. She said she'd been through all sorts of traumas escaping her home country and found this was even worse. They were animals, she described them. So it's not, I guess, just the UK.
How terrible. And Hong Kong has just come through with some really amazing things for their in the trans right department. Like, didn't they permit the first trans couple to marry earlier this year? That was a judge-made law.
Perhaps it hasn't got down to everyone yet.
No, clearly not. Wow.
Back in the UK, Prime Minister David Cameron has said that he is quite happy to look at a law that would pardon World War II veteran Alan Turing. Now, Alan Turing was a gay man and one of the chief code breakers responsible for cracking the codes of the Nazis during World War II. Sadly, he was persecuted due to his sexuality, and the government is looking at a law that would pardon them.
Well, Alan Turing is, being a computer geek myself, he's very well known in my circles. Well, you fail the Turing test if you're speaking to a machine and you don't know you're speaking to a machine.
Huh. Mm, intriguing.
Yes. You pass it if you figure it out.
Hi, this is Janne, Mr. Gay Finland, and you are listening on the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
It's been fun exploring Denmark tonight. A big thank you to Kenneth Engberg, the Acting Secretary General of LGBT Denmark, to Christine and Liao, who have both sent us messages on Facebook during the week. So from the team here on World Wide Wave, we look forward to seeing you next week on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy.
Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.